passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Mike Rowe here with a radical idea. If you want to see more companies make more things in this country, buy more things from more companies who make things in this country. I refer in this case to the incredible t-shirts, sweatshirts, blue jeans, and more made by my friends at American Giant. Everything American Giant makes is made in the United States. And right now, you can take 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com/Mike. That's American-Giant.com/Mike.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me, as always, is Peter Flaherty. Millie is with us this week, but asleep, at least for now. We'll see. We've got a great deal to talk about this week on the podcast. We've reached the midpoint of the college baseball season, so we're going to definitely get into, you know, some surprises, some disappointments from the first half. It's been it's kind of crazy how the schedule flies by, but we are at the midpoint, and we're excited to kind of review where we're at and look ahead to where we're going. And then we're going to get into the big series from last weekend, that being LSU and Tennessee, and look ahead to this weekend, what those two teams have, as LSU has another top 10 series on tap at South Carolina, and Tennessee hosts Florida. Doesn't get any easier for the Vols this weekend, really, except they are at home. And then out west, Oregon and Oregon State in an intriguing Pac-12 showdown. And we'll get into Miami heading to Virginia in what looks like a pretty exciting ACC matchup as well. So a lot to get to today on the Baseball America College Podcast. Peter, like I said, we're at the midpoint of the season. Does it feel like we're at the midpoint of the season? I think that for me, it does. The weather is really warmed up. And now that we're past basketball season, all of that's over. MLB's had their opening day. It just kind of feels like now we can make a big second half push as a college baseball sport moving forward.
I was going to say, once the season starts, it seems to always fly by. But like you said, between my allergies starting, the college basketball now ending, MLB opening day, it's getting lighter outside, it's getting warmer. It definitely has that mid to late season feel, and each series is just going to become that more important, each weekend that much bigger, and each individual game is going to be that much bigger for a lot of these teams. So I think we're in for an exciting last month plus of a regular season, and then we kind of head into the conference tournaments and regional play, which is kind of hard to believe that we're talking about it already, but I'm excited about it.
Pretty much every Tuesday, maybe you do it on Wednesdays too, depending on the slate. But anyway, in the midweek, you tweet out a list of games that you're focusing on. You can follow Peter at Peter G. Flaherty. And I was looking at your list today, and I was starting to work through the projected field of 64 for this week. And I was like, oh, well, that one has implications for the field as I put this together. And so does that one and that one. And it's definitely starting to become a little more real. You have to actually acknowledge that the postseason is coming, that, you know, you can't just say, well, it's early in the season anymore, that, you know, these games, you know, they count, but we're not thinking about that. Like when North Carolina State and ECU play each other, it becomes that much bigger of a deal for both of the teams, or UNC and South Carolina. There are some intriguing midweek matchups this week. We're not going to touch on them at all, other than what I just said, because we're recording this a day early, because everything starts a day early this week, it being Easter week. A lot of the series run Thursday to Saturday this week, so something to keep in mind as you're planning your weekend. It's not not a typical schedule for a lot of teams around the country. And that is why you're getting this podcast in your feed a day earlier. Let's get to some of this midseason talking points here in terms of surprises and disappointments. This is something that, you know, I get asked a lot this time of year. So let's answer it here on the podcast. I get asked who surprised you this year? Who's stood out in a positive way? And, you know, like last year, nobody really had Tennessee running away from the field the way they did. Oftentimes it's something like that. But Peter, this year we have some legitimate, like true surprises, like teams that are not typically all that good that are in the top 10 now. Boston College and Kentucky both moved into the top 10 this year, this week for the first time in a long time. In Kentucky's case, it was 2018, early in the season. In BC's case, this is the first time ever. You have Southern Cal ranked. They've won four straight Pac-12 series to open conference play. They hadn't won four straight Pac-12 series since 2001. And if you need a little bit more fine of a, like, well, okay, but how long ago was 2001? Yes, that's 20 years ago. But Mark Pryor was a USC Trojan the last time they won four straight Pac-12 series. And of course, back then it was Pac-10 series. And Coastal also moved into the rankings this week. And Coastal's a little bit of a difference here. Like, they actually made the NCAA tournament last year. They have been more consistently good than some of these other teams that we're talking about. But they're so good this year that they're at the top of the Sun Belt standings right now. They're a team that's looking at, like, they can host regionals. And I that's a little bit of a departure. We hadn't seen Coastal quite that level for the last couple of years, at least, really, since they hosted in 2018. So those are kind of the teams I picked out as surprises, Peter. And we've talked about BC on the podcast here. We've talked some about USC. We haven't really gotten that much into Kentucky or Coastal, but any of those four, if you want to talk about your level of surprise or whether you saw any of this coming.
I think I'm most surprised, as probably everyone is, with Boston College coming off of last season. They didn't make the ACC tournament for the second straight year, 19-34, 5-25 in the conference. And this year they've already surpassed both of those win totals. After this past weekend series win of Georgia Tech, they've got 20 on the year, 8-4 now in the conference. They've won four straight conference series. And they're not only in the tournament conversation, they're going to have to play themselves out of the tournament at this point. But they're also in the hosting conversation. And it's interesting because I don't know how that will shake out with them hosting and if they're even able to.
They are able to. With the new facility, they're able to.
Nice. Okay. So that would be – so being familiar with that facility, this is a little bit of an aside, but that'll be a really fun environment if they do host. It's very open. Very fan friendly, and that'll be
Wonder how open it would be. I would have to like talk with somebody at BC about this, because the facility you see now that you're familiar with, it if you watch on TV or if you've been there, it seats 1,000, maybe 1,200. They have the ability to expand it for a tournament setting. They can like double the amount of seats in there. I don't know exactly how they do it. A lot of teams do that, but they would add some more stands, I think, would be the plan. So some of the openness would get sacrificed, but that would mean more fans in the seats, which is never a bad thing.
Yeah, no doubt. But anyways, I'd say I'm most surprised with BC, and they're playing just very, very sound baseball on either side. They're throwing quality strikes. They're hitting the ball well. And on the offensive side, it's not who you'd think. Travis Honeyman is having a solid season, but a pair of seniors in Barry Walsh and Peter Burns are kind of leading the way with batting averages of .348 and .339 respectively. Honeyman has started to come on as of late, and he's up to .290 with three home runs. He's been hitting the ball hard all year, has just hit into some tough luck outs, but is now finally starting to find some green. And then pitching wise, Chris Flynn has been magnificent. 1.76 ERA, 53 Ks in 41 innings, 229 opponents batting average. And his story is a great one. So out of high school, he was hardly recruited, really not recruited at all. We ended up going to Roger Williams, which is a very small Division III school in Rhode Island. And not only did he go to Roger Williams, he was a walk-on at Roger Williams, where he then made the team, had a great four-year career there before grad transferring to Boston College. So the D3 to D1 leap in and of itself is always a big one. But with Flynn, it's even cooler given that he was a walk-on at the D3 and now he's finding so much success at Boston College, and he's been a huge reason why they've been able to win so many of these Sunday rubber matches they find themselves in, even though he's throwing on Saturdays. But he keeps them in every series. You can count on anywhere from 5 to 7 quality innings from him time in and time out. And they've had a lot of sophomore arms take a leap. Julian Tonghini is one of them. Joey Ryan's another. He's kind of gotten hit around a little bit lately, but he's been good out of the bullpen. Matt Noonan, again, ERA inflated because of a tough outing on Sunday in that 24-12 affair, but they've got everything going for them. And admittedly, I've kind of sat here and wonder when the carriage is going to turn into a pumpkin, so to speak, with them. And it's just not. And I think it's time that, you know, everyone around the country takes this BC team seriously. I know that any opponent they have will, because they're a top 10 team in the country, but this is a legitimate super regional Omaha type team, and they just keep proving it. They might not have as prospecty a roster as some of these other teams, or that, you know, they play in a cold weather state, but they're for real. And they've got another good series this weekend against Louisville. Kentucky, I'm surprised with, just given how well they're playing. 25-3, 8-1 in the conference. A really good series win this weekend over a Missouri team that I think is a very solid ball club, and they swept them very comfortably. So I'd say just because of the sheer loudness, I guess, of their record, I'm surprised. If you had told me Kentucky, or really anyone from the SEC, would be a regional team at this point, I wouldn't have totally been floored, just because of the high quality baseball up and down the conference. But Hunter Gilliam's been fantastic for them, hitting .410 with 8 doubles and 6 home runs. Second baseman Emilian Petre, again, he's kind of a slash and dash guy, moves the baseball really well, .370. And then Jackson Gray and Jace Felker hitting .350 and .329. But on the mound is kind of where the Cats have found a ton of success. Team ERA of 3. Starting out of the bullpen, Ryan Hagenow has been magnificent. He seems to have found his niche in the bullpen. He struggled as a starter after being a highly touted recruit, but moved him to a closer setup role this year, and he's been outstanding. And then in the rotation, Zach Lee has been great as their Friday guy, and Tyler Bosma on Saturdays has been great as well. So Cats again are playing good baseball. It's another top 10 team you're talking about. If you had told me either of those teams were in the top 10, I would have probably laughed a little bit, just because of, again, I was very, very shocked with both being in the top 10.
Before we move on, let me hit on Kentucky here for a second. Because what you said about BC, you know, just where they came from the last 2 years makes them more surprising. And I definitely agree with that. Kentucky is a little bit different. They're a team that usually hovers around the NCAA tournament bubble that, you know, maybe could be ranked at certain points during the year. And, you know, last year they beat Tennessee, you know, to win a series against Tennessee a year ago, which I think it was just them and Notre Dame. Nobody else did it. That, like, that says a lot. That says how much talent you have. But they're playing more consistent baseball this year. They're third in the nation in ERA. And, like, that is the surprising thing about Kentucky. If you told me, oh, okay, like, you'll rank them in the top 25 at some point and they'll be in the tournament, I would have said, okay, I get it. Like you said, Peter, like, if you're an SEC team and you do that in any given year, like, sure. But this 8-1 start in SEC play, the fact that we're, you know, talking about them potentially hosting for the first time since 2017, you know, a team that's into the top 10 that just hasn't lost at all this year, basically. And that's the thing that stands out. And then the other thing that stands out about Kentucky to me is that they're kind of zigging a little bit here in the SEC. And the SEC right now, a lot of things are very power driven offensively, certainly on the mound too. And Kentucky can mix it up with the best of them pitching wise, clearly, if they third in the nation in ERA. But they're a team that likes to move the ball a little bit. Like, you don't see a lot of action offenses in the SEC. Vanderbilt does it to a certain degree, but Kentucky's doing it too this year. And I'll be interested to see as we keep going through the SEC play, how much that puts pressure on some of these pitching staffs that aren't used to it. And, you know, some of the defenses, you're going to have to field bunts. You're going to have to get ready to play hit and runs. When you see Kentucky, you're going to have to defend stolen bases. And again, that makes them a little bit different and just a little bit tougher to prepare for, maybe.
Absolutely. And that's a great point. They do play. They really push the pace on teams. They're not afraid to play small. They'll beat you kind of playing a West Coast style. And I think that their sustained success has been, I guess, a little bit of a surprise to this point, just because they're no stranger to fast starts. In 2021, they were, I think, 18-3. And then in 2022, they were 14-3 before getting into the meat of the SEC schedule. And for lack of a better term, just fading away. But this year it's through 9 games, 8-1. They're clearly here to stay. This is a very different team than those past two seasons. This is a team that can probably sustain success. And I mean, they're right in the thick of things for a top 8 national seed. And then the last surprise you mentioned, Coastal Carolina. I think that they're the least surprising team of the bunch, just because they've been the class of the Sun Belt. They've won a national championship recently, somewhat recently. And they're, again, a tournament team, but I think what makes them unique in this season is the fact that they might be hosting. They lost a lot from last year and people were expecting a little bit of a step back, but they're hitting the ball really well again. Springbrook Stadium is very hard to pitch at, and so their ERA is a little inflated, but they do have some talent on the mound. Darren Horn, Bryce Schaefer, and Matt Potok are kind of the three big guys, and then Teddy Sharkey out of the bullpen has been nails. So they're a coastal team in that they're really going to hit. They can get into shootouts with anybody and kind of go punch for punch and play, get into a home run derby, so to speak. They have the personnel to do that, but I think it's surprising that we're sitting here past the midway point and they're right in the thick of things and hosting a regional. So I like those as the three main surprises, and if there's anything else you want to touch on with them, obviously go ahead.
Third in the nation in scoring for Coastal, and it's just a deep lineup. Like we've seen in the past, you know, just to within the last couple of years, Coastal has turned out some really big time draft prospects that are position players, and I don't think that this year they really have a guy. Like, is Nick Lucky their best prospect from a hitting standpoint, Peter? Like, I just don't see they certainly don't have a first or a second round type, but is there someone I'm overlooking here as an obvious draft prospect for the Shawns?
No, you're spot on. In the 2023 class, it is Nick Lucky, and he's a good player. He's a twitchy.
We're talking about a fourth year player though, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, it's like, you can only get so high of a prospect status. I mean, I think he hears his name called somewhere, but in terms of that, like, Eric Brown type top three rounder, you're going to have to look down the road a little bit at maybe Caden Bodine in 2025. That's so far down the road, and he's only had 89 college at bats. So I'd say it's Nick Lucky. And like you said, they're doing it without a super prospecty roster, which is very impressive. And Coach Gilmore, year in and year out, just gets the absolute most out of any hitter he brings onto campus.
Yeah, and they all just hit. They're hitting like .330 as a team. I think they're fifth in the nation or something in batting average. It's been quite impressive. And the Sun Belt is so deep this year. It'll be interesting to see, you know, who else emerges from that conference right now. But the way Coastal is hitting the ball, the way that they've really been able to find some identity there offensively with an older lineup is really impressive. And if they do get to host, that's a really fun venue. That would be a really offensive regional, I'm sure. Just a fun one to think about a little bit down the line. But right now, we can just enjoy this Coastal team. And it's definitely a fun one to watch. You know there are going to be runs. If you put on a Coastal game, you know there are going to be runs. So if you like offense, the Chanticleers are definitely one to look at. On the flip side, there have definitely been some disappointing teams this year. And, you know, if you look at teams, if you look at the preseason top 25, you'll find that Ole Miss and Texas A&M were preseason top 10 teams. They just played a series this weekend, and it was not it was not the hype was not there. The hype that we had in Baton Rouge, it was not there. It could have been a top 10 series. That's what we had expected it to be. Instead, it was something else, as those teams are kind of fighting for their lives at this point. So obviously it's disappointing when you see teams like that fade off. There have been some other disappointments around the country. Oklahoma, I thought they would probably take a step back. They had the most players drafted from last year's national runner-up, but they're definitely fighting it right now as well, although they did just split a four-game series against Stanford. So maybe that's something coming around. Virginia Tech won the ACC a year ago. They're fighting it, although they just won a series against Virginia. So that was a big deal for the Hokies. I want to spend a little bit more time on this team, though, Peter. We haven't talked about them in weeks, if we even talked about them then, but it's Florida State. Florida State has the longest NCAA tournament streak in college baseball. They've made it 44 straight years. That is in serious jeopardy right now. They are just 3-9 in the ACC. The metrics are fine, but they actually need to win some conference games. And they have really struggled to do that to this point. This is a team that through the first couple of weeks, I thought was pretty darn good. They had just gone out and won a series at TCU. But since then, just not a whole lot's gone right. They've got a first-year coach in Link Jarrett. Link obviously is a really good coach, took Notre Dame to Omaha. But the Noles right now are in a tough spot. And as it relates to that postseason streak, I mean, they've been in tight spots late in the season before. I think it was like 2016 or 17 with just a couple weeks to go. It was not looking good. And then they got really hot and they might've even won the ACC tournament that year, but they made it, it turned out not to be a problem. So they've been in tight spots before and they have found a way back, but this one feels a little bit different. Just that 3-9 record in the ACC is very unsightly at this stage of the season.
Yeah, and like you said, they've been in precarious positions before when it comes to keeping their regional streak alive, and they've been able to wiggle out of it with a couple of big series wins or a deep run into the ACC tournament. But this year really feels like they're on life support. Between sitting at just 12-15, 3-9 in the ACC, there's really not a lot you can point to this point as kind of a, oh, hey, Florida State, they did this. I think you have to go back to the second weekend of the season with their series win over TCU, who was at that point, I think, a top 10 team or top 15 team for us. But since then, it's just been very, very, it's been a really rough stretch. And they have dealt with some injuries. Demez Ross, who emerged as a freshman contributor early on, he missed a lot of time. Wyatt Crowell's been out for a little while, but they've just struggled to find consistency on both sides of the baseball. I think their lineup is very good with Ferrer and Tibbs. I wouldn't necessarily say very good, but Ferrer and Tibbs are a really nice 3-4 punch they've got. Each are very good draft prospects for 2024. And so looking ahead a little bit, next year they'll be in a better position, I think, with them coming back. But outside of them, they've really struggled to get any production. Jordan Carrion has 20 RBIs, and Ben Barrett, a freshman, has also done very well. But outside of them, it's really, really been tough for them to find a source of runs in a big hit or even just like shooting a gap. It's been very hard for them to get stuff going. And then on the mound, they've had guys who put together good seasons. Jackson Baumeister, draft eligible sophomore, he'll go pretty good in this year's draft, but he's had a couple of spotty outings. And then it's just kind of a bunch of guys sitting in the mid fours with their ERAs, and they haven't gotten consistency with going deep into games. Carson Montgomery, I think, is a guy that I know that they expected a little bit more out of, and I know sitting here talking with you, and he's someone that we also probably expected more out of, and not to be sitting on April 4th as we talk with an ERA above 7.5, striking out less than nine hitters per, striking out less than a hitter an inning, 19 walks in 26 innings, and then hitters are hitting 300 against him. So it's just kind of been a I guess just a womp womp, so to speak, for Florida State and Tallahassee, and trying to look at how they can right the ship. They're going to have to do it quick.
This weekend is critical. They play Clemson this weekend. Clemson's 16-13, 2-7 in the ACC. They're at home. Like, it has to start this weekend. Like, I don't ever like saying you have to sweep a series until you literally have to. So I'm not going to sit here and say they have to get a sweep this weekend. But they have to win the series this weekend. If they don't win this weekend, I genuinely don't even see a path.
Right. That brought me to my next point. This series is a must win. And then after that, if you don't win this weekend, I think barring something insane, they're going to have to win the ACC tournament. Should they even make
it? Which right now they don't even qualify for. Like, right. They would, if it ended today, which first of all would be weird, but if it ended today, they don't go to the ACC tournament.
Yeah. That's unbelievable to think about. So they're on serious life support. And they need to turn things around quickly.
It's unbelievable that this is where we're at with them. I thought they were a pretty good team, and you know, injuries will do that, obviously, and you know, weird things happen. They've got to get it turned around though, and they have time. But they're staring at a 9-game losing streak. They just got swept by Miami for the first time since 2001. Times are tough in Tallahassee, and this weekend is as big as they come, not for the reasons that we would normally think with a series between Florida State and Clemson, but here we are. All right, so we're going to get into this week's slate slash a little bit of last week with LSU and Tennessee in a second. But first, check this out.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, so last weekend I was in Baton Rouge. It was phenomenal, potentially the series of the year, certainly the series of the year to this point in college baseball. There's some big ones to come. There's some big ones this weekend. They may yet eclipse what we saw, but it was everything that it was billed to be in terms of the talent on the field, the atmosphere in the stands. LSU set a single game attendance record on Thursday night. And I just cannot overemphasize, like, it was a Thursday night in March and LSU packed 13,000 fans into the park. That's not typical. Thursday night games are great for TV, and teams in the SEC usually draw reasonably well on Thursday night, but they're not usually filling the stands. LSU set, I believe, a weekend attendance record as well. Something like 35,000 fans were in the stands over the course of the weekend. Oftentimes when you see the massive attendances, like, no shade on anyone who gets them this way, but they usually combine them with spring football. Like, that's usually how the biggest attendance numbers are hit in the sport. LSU did it in a weekend in which their women's basketball team was winning a national championship. Like in a not very unattainable road trip for their fans. Like they were in Dallas, was all. And the LSU fans came out huge, and that made the series all the more special, I felt like. But in terms of the talent on the field, you got the Skeens-Dollander matchup that scouts wanted, and you know, Paul Skeens looked phenomenal, and Chase Dollander looked really good, but you put him up against Paul Skeens, and he wasn't that good. You know, Skeens was definitely the better of the two of them on the night, and for the season to this point. Nobody's pitched better than Paul Skeens this season. And LSU comes away with the series win. Tennessee did win the game on Sunday, or Saturday, the third game. They made that one a bit more of a slugfest. The first two had been a little more low scoring. Tennessee was able to muddy it up on Saturday. And I'm sure some people in Baton Rouge are now asking if LSU has a Sunday starter problem, which is a reasonable question to ask, I guess. But my answer to it would just be that most teams have third starter issues. Like the number of teams that don't have third starter issues is so minimal that, is that a bit of a concern for LSU moving forward? Like, I guess, but again, the teams that don't have third starter issues are like Florida, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, end of list. Everyone else is like a week or two away from wondering if they have enough pitching on a Sunday. So when you have LSU's lineup, I'm not going to be concerned about where they're at. And LSU certainly has talent to replace Thatcher Hurd in the rotation, or to get Thatcher Hurd right, if that's, you know, whatever course of action they want to take over the next couple months. Like, I think they'll be all right there. So that's kind of my take on that weekend, Peter. From what you saw from people you've talked to, just what did you think of the weekend?
I think you hit the nail on the head with the, I guess, the Sunday starter issue narrative. I think anyone at this point that's looking for a hole in this LSU team is almost just, I think, being very nitpicky. I think looking up and down their roster, there really isn't a serious hole. They came into this season with as much hype or as around a team as anyone has, and they've lived up to it and maybe even exceeded it somehow in some ways. But after this weekend, I think that obviously they're the clear number one team. And I think from a draft perspective, Dylan Cruz and Paul Skeens are the best hitter and best pitcher respectively in this year's class. I don't think that there's really an argument to be made against either of them. And that's no disrespect or indictment against any of the other prospects in the draft. I just think that they are that good. And
Paul Skeens has like 80 strikeouts in 40 innings or something, and Dylan Cruz is hitting 540. Like, there is no shade on anyone. Like, you're just not doing what they've done to this point. Then that's fine. Like, those dudes are just insane right now.
Right. And this is a really good Tennessee team and Tennessee lineup. Like, Paul Skeens had to face Mal Yehuna, Christian Moore, Blake Berg, Zane Denton, Jared Dickey, Griffin Merritt, true freshman Dylan Dreiling's been great. I mean, there's not a pushover in that 1-9, and he came out and you saw it in person, but he made mincemeat of them. I mean, first three pitches of the game, three swinging strikes against Mal Yehuna, 98, 99, and I think 101 on the stadium gun. And then he was on cruise control for the rest of the game. The slider was just hellacious. It's a strong 70 pitch.
He should not be allowed to throw it.
It's ridiculous. And he's able to manipulate its shape too, which is something that I hadn't seen in the first kind of few starts that he had, but he'll get more vertical on it and back foot it against lefties. And then against righties, it'll be more of a sweeper. And the fastball is what it is. It's 100 with run, and he's got command of all three of his pitches. It's three probably double plus pitches. He's a very special, one of a kind pitching prospect. And I don't know when we'll see someone of his caliber again. So I'm just trying to enjoy it while it lasts. And the same with Dylan Cruz. It's elite swing decisions, big time bat speed, and then power to all fields. He drives the ball with authority. You can't really beat him with anything. And then the rest of their lineup, it's Tommy White, who's been really good as of late. Gavin Dugas, a guy that I know has provided them with a big boost, both off the field and on the field. He's their kind of de facto captain, I would say. And then they've got a host of freshmen that are talented. So this is a very, very complete LSU team. They look like they're going to be really, really good for a long time. And Tennessee, I think it's interesting when talking about it, and we'll segue into it when we talk about the Florida series, but they have a chance to head into the home stretch of the season being, I don't want to, I guess slept on, because we could be talking about a Tennessee team next week that has lost two SEC series in a row. Not sure where necessarily they might fall in the rankings. But make no mistake about it, that this Tennessee team is one of the most talented rosters in the country. And I think can go up against anyone and is a national championship type team, especially with their coaching staff and what they can get out of their team. So, I don't think that this weekend lowered my thinking on Tennessee at all. I think it's just, you go into, I guess, the meat grinder that is LSU, and they just chew you up and spit you out and send you on your way. So I'm very curious to see how they respond, and I'm very curious to see how South Carolina does against them in LSU's a big road test for the Tigers.
I'm working on a Tennessee piece now that should be out later this week. It's an interesting dynamic, because this definitely is not last year's team. Like, literally, it's not. Most of those, or a lot of those guys, I think literally most of the lineup is now in pro ball. The rotation is basically the same. Like, last year, they were able to mix in a little bit some other guys, and, you know, Ben Joyce is in the bullpen and wasn't there, and you know, the pitching staff's a little bit different, but has a lot of the same pieces, and it's just not last year's team, and it's not fair to compare them to last year's team, and I think everyone intellectually understands that, but they are in some ways burdened by the fact that they are following that team, and nobody's going to feel sorry for them, and you shouldn't feel sorry for them for that, but it is just a little, you kind of have to disassociate what they did last year with what they're trying to do this year and what they're capable of doing this year. The thing that I'm intrigued by with them moving forward is that it's taken them a bit of time to kind of figure out their lineup. I do think that they've kind of gotten the pieces that they want in there now. And with so many new players, of course, it was going to take a little bit of time. What does the second half look like if they're able to, you know, more consistently run those same guys out in those right positions and all the rest of that? That's something to look at. And then the pitching staff, coming into the season, I definitely talked about how, like, Tennessee might have the best rotation in the country, or Tennessee did have the best rotation in the country on paper. And that's definitely, they're still up there with any of the best. Like, Vanderbilt now, maybe you could say is the best. Like, that might be who I would identify. Tennessee is really good. Tennessee's, just saying they have the best rotation, though, isn't quite fair to them and how they're used, because they run so deep. They have guys out of the bullpen that can go multiple innings, like Seth Halverson, like Andrew Lindsay. They were very aggressive using their bullpen last year, but they were more aggressive in using them and to get like one inning guys out there. I felt like, you know, Redmond Walsh was a one inning guy at the back of the bullpen. Ben Joyce was typically a one inning guy. They had a lot of them, and so they ran through a lot of them, but they got their starters out early. They're doing the same thing this year, just a little bit with guys who have multiple innings. They're not true piggybacks in any event, but what you saw them do against LSU was run Halverson, run Lindsay out for multi-inning appearances. And if they're able to do that, they don't need the rotation guys to pitch deep into games. You'd like a little bit more out of them than what they got this weekend at LSU. But I do think that makes them dangerous, because they have this depth on the mound that, you know, that they again have one of the deepest pitching staffs in the country, and they're not going to change their rotation moving forward. Like I don't anticipate that in any way, but just what they can do with those guys over the final 7 weeks of the SEC season is going to be really interesting to watch.
Yeah, they've got a lot of cards they can shuffle around, and they have the personnel there to make a deep run. It would take a lot for me to be really concerned about the Vols. And I think once that they get into a regional setting and a tournament setting, they're well suited to go three games deep at times, and then to sustain a run to Omaha, they've got a great rotation. Like you said, they have a bunch of bullpen guys who've been great. Xander Sechrist, Cam Sewell, Aaron Combs. There are a lot of ways that they can run guys out and a lot of iterations they can use. So I think that while they certainly aren't happy sitting at 21-8 and 4-5 in the SEC, and it might not have been what we expected, I think they're just fine. They're a really good baseball team, and they're at some point or another, they are going to kind of figure it out and find that perfect potion where it all does click. And then they're inevitably going to hit their stride. So yeah, they're 21-8, 4-5, not stupendous, but I think that they will figure it out sooner rather than later.
Here's the thing that I just thought of that I think I'm going to make two fan bases in the SEC really mad at me right now. So get ready for that. What if Tennessee is last year's Arkansas? And so by that, I mean, it's not a perfect comparison, but it's the team after the team. So like Arkansas was insanely good in 2021, and then they were good last year, but it was clearly a different team. Arkansas did win a bunch of SEC games, but their RPI never reflected either their talent or their SEC record, really, for a variety of reasons, and they didn't host. Tennessee doesn't have the RPI problem. Their RPI is fine, but they're 4-5, and Peter, you alluded to it. Like, if they lost this weekend at home to Florida, which would be entirely plausible, you're looking at a team that's 5-7 in the SEC, then they have to go to Arkansas, then they come home and play Vanderbilt, and those are both losable weekends as well. Winnable weekends for Tennessee, certainly, but also losable weekends. And so all of a sudden, you could stack up some SEC losses. That the SEC right now is very crowded in terms of hosts, potentially. There are seven teams right now that are ranked in the top 15 of our rankings. So that gives you an idea. Typically, seven teams from a conference do not host. And so somebody might get squeezed, and that somebody might be Tennessee, because they still have to play, again, Florida, Arkansas, Vanderbilt, and South Carolina, and Kentucky.
And they've got Florida, Arkansas, Vandy. Sorry to interject. They've got them consecutively.
Yeah. Starting and you can add the fact that they just played LSU. Like, this is an insane month that they're playing right now.
Right.
So if SEC losses start piling up for them, they might be the team that gets squeezed out. But to your point, like, eventually they've got so much talent, like, it's going to click in for them. And if it doesn't click in soon enough for them that they, you know, wind up not hosting a regional, I don't know that that's the worst thing for them, because, you know, you become unburdened by the fact that you have to be a host. Like, they do have a nice home field advantage. That's absolutely true. But like, look at what Arkansas did. They went on the road for 2 weeks last year, and you know, the Stillwater Regional was insane, but, you know, they won that with relative ease. Like, it wasn't them that was trying to come out of the loser's bracket. That was Oklahoma State. And then they swept UNC in a super. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if that ends up being Tennessee's path this year.
Right. And I'm with you. And they would head into the tournament being viewed as, I think, one of the toughest two seeds in recent memory. And they're a team that no one's going to want to see. So
yeah, everyone would talk about them the way they talked about Arkansas last year. Like, oh, like, you don't want Arkansas in your bracket. And like, oh, look, like, Oklahoma State, you're on upset watch because Arkansas. And yeah, it would be that. And I don't know, maybe that's not the worst thing. Like, they've done the home regional. They've won it that way. They did it 2 years ago. And, you know, last year they just got upset. But like, I think that them taking their particular show on the road, like, it might work out for them.
Exactly. No, I agree. And it's going to be very fascinating to see how it all plays out over the next. I think that there will be a pretty good handle on where Tennessee stands after April 23rd, when they finish their series at Vanderbilt. I think at that point, well, you can't make a final determination on where they'll end up with a month left in the SEC tournament still to play. I think that they will be in either one spot or another after that series.
So let's look ahead to this weekend. LSU heads to South Carolina. Peter, we're sitting here. It's April 4th. What is South Carolina? Like, on the one hand, they look really good. Their numbers are great. The record is the record, and the record right now is 26-3. It's very loud. But if you actually look at the teams that they've played, they haven't seen anything like South or like LSU yet. And like, that's a little unfair. There aren't that many teams running around that look like LSU, but they haven't played Florida yet. They haven't played LSU yet. They get the Tigers this weekend, and they get them at home, which is significant. But I also, you know, South Carolina has one of the most hitter-friendly ballparks in the SEC, and I kind of worry about what the LSU hitters might do to Founders Park this weekend. The good news is South Carolina has a really good pitching staff. I don't know what they're doing with Will Sanders this weekend. I don't know yet, you know, what the intention is there. But South Carolina still has good pitching. I will be very curious to see how they attack this LSU offense, however.
Yeah, so I think their schedule has been light. They haven't had they're kind of just entering the gauntlet of the SEC. But I will say, going down to Mississippi State and a Duty Noble Field, regardless of how good Mississippi State is on any given year, going down there and winning a series is not easy by any stretch of the imagination. So the fact that they did that in rather convincing fashion was encouraging to me. 26-3 is 26-3, no matter how you slice it. Baseball is really hard. It's really weird, and it's really, really difficult to win 26 of 29 games. They also have a sweep of Missouri, which included two walk-offs, and then you're kind of like, okay, what else do you have? They do have a series win over Clemson, and then it's a bunch of low mid-major teams, but they are 18-0 at Founders Park. Like you said, it is very hitter friendly, and LSU is LSU. So I can only imagine what might transpire, but they've got a really dynamite 2025 draft guy in Ethan Petrie. He's an absolute behemoth. He's hitting .442, 13 home runs, 42 RBIs. I think at this point he's favorite for SEC Freshman of the Year.
I would say National Freshman of the Year right now.
I was going to say, and then probably National Freshman of the Year as well.
Long way to go. Plenty of time for other folks, but right now.
Exactly. And then Braylon Wimmer's hitting well, .342, 8 home runs. Gavin Cassis has exploded and really blossomed in his new home with 15 home runs, hitting .311. And then their pitching's been solid. They've gotten a lot of quality outings from Noah Hall. They have a trio of freshman arms who have done well. Eli Jerzenbeck, Eli Jones has been solid. So I think they're a very, very good team. I think that sticking them in the Omaha conversation is a very valid conversation and a very valid seat at the table that they would have. Their schedule is going to be a whole lot harder than it was the first 29 games with this series against LSU, followed by a series at Vanderbilt, then Florida, then Auburn. So we will find out whether or not I think that they are a true top five or so team sooner rather than later. I think that they're definitely a regional team. They're probably a host when all is said and done, but I'm curious to see just how good this South Carolina team is. Like, are we sitting here next weekend talking about them as the best team in the country if they can somehow win the series against LSU, or are we kind of saying, hey, you know what? They're still a good quality club, probably top 15, but maybe not the top five team that we thought they were. So we'll find out sooner rather than later on them. I am very excited about this club, not only this year and in the future. So this weekend will be a very, very high quality series.
Yeah, a lot of what I said about Tennessee just is similarly true for South Carolina, what I just said about them, just in terms of again, there are seven teams that are in the top 15 right now from the SEC, and losses are going to happen. Right now, the SEC looks like it has a real upper class and a real lower class and not a whole lot in the middle. If it's going to keep like that, you know, that's fine. But if a middle class eventually develops, like plausibly South Carolina falls into it, like I think they're really good. But I also think we can't ignore the fact that it's come against Georgia, Missouri, and Mississippi State, which have won a total of 5 SEC games. And 3 of those are Mizzou beating Tennessee, yes, but that was also on opening weekend and Mizzou was much healthier then. So I don't know. I don't know. I am looking forward to the next 3 weeks to learn a lot more about South Carolina. You can't ask for a better test than this weekend. We are going to find out everything we need to know, I feel like, about South Carolina over the next 3 weeks, starting with this one. Florida, meanwhile, goes to Tennessee. The Gators are number two in the country. They've been really solid offensively, more than solid offensively. Like, that kind of is what the team is hanging their hat on at this point. Pitching has been a little bit up and down. Some of that probably is just attributable to SEC offenses being good. They're going to encounter another really good one this weekend against Tennessee, though. And I think for Florida to win the series on the road, they're going to need their pitching staff to lock in a way that they haven't really been locked in for a full weekend much this year. I think they kind of need it this weekend.
Yeah. And I think if you're looking, if people are looking to circle a weekend on their calendar where Tennessee is going to get going or where they could get going, it'll be this one at home against Florida. They're going to be coming into the series pissed off because they lost at LSU, and they'll be playing with a serious chip on their shoulder because they will go into it with the mindset of, okay, people have kind of written us off a little bit. Let's show us who we are and what we're about, and let's take it to Florida here. So I think this could be a turning point in Tennessee's season. And I think in the hitter-friendly ballpark that they play in, they're well-positioned to potentially win this series. The Florida offense is absolutely ridiculous, though. Obviously, at the top with Jack Caglione, he's a one-of-a-kind talent. There's no really other way to slice it. He's a 6'5 monster. He's hitting 410, has a really good handle of the barrel, makes sound swing decisions, absolutely, I mean, just melts baseballs. His max EV of the year is 120 miles an hour, which is unheard of at any level, let alone college. 18 home runs, leads the country, 44 RBIs, and then you have to talk about Wyatt Langford, who's returning from a lower body injury. He's gotten off to a great start. Josh Rivera's production has been, I can't overstate how valuable Josh Rivera's production has been for the Gators. I don't want to say it's the reason why they're 24-5, but it is a huge reason why they've had so much success early on. Yeah. And it's clear.
Imagine if he just goes in the draft last year, like that he's so much better this year. He's just having such a better year.
No doubt. And it's a violent swing. It's tailored to do damage. And then they've gotten a ton of production from Cade Kierland, who's been a great freshman. If it wasn't for Ethan Petrie, probably is being talked about as SEC freshman of the year. And then Colby Halter's come on as of late. Where their one kind of bugaboo and inconsistency has been is on the mound. They haven't really, the talent's there with Sproat and Waldrop and Caglione as your weekend rotation. I'd be hard pressed to find multiple rotations that are head and shoulders above that. It's just been getting consistency, and I'd say three straight starts in a row where all of them are clicking. And it is difficult to do, like I talked about with South Carolina's record. Baseball is so hard, and especially when you're in the SEC, it's very difficult to get three lights out starts in a row. But Caglione, the last couple of Sundays, the last few Sundays, hasn't been at his best. And so I kind of wonder what I don't know. I don't want to speculate too much, but they do have the personnel. If they want to maybe move him to a more abbreviated role, they do have the personnel to replace him on Sundays.
I mean, I think that's a legitimate conversation for a lot of players. I would just say, you know, he's a sophomore who's never gone through the SEC before, like didn't pitch last year, like just let him work through it. But he's so valuable offensively. And you do have to wonder, what is that taking out of him? And the list of dudes that have been as good as he is, like, it's hard to be a two-way player at any level. And I've talked with a lot of coaches about how you deal with it. And sometimes you just kind of have to build everything around the fact that you have this really good two-way player from a rotation standpoint. And I don't think they have the ability to do that because they're trying to be better than, like, he's not their best starter, you know? So like, they can't just put him on Friday and build everything around it. He has to fit with everyone else. And it maybe is a conversation they need to have at some point.
Exactly. And I wonder, he's up to 99 from the left side, will sit 96, 98. He moves really athletically. The slider flashes plus. I wonder if they end up using him maybe in a later inning role where he could mow down. He could really plow through a couple of innings at a time. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. I think they'll probably wait a little while before they entertain that idea. But I don't know. I do think that this is going to be an interesting series with how good Tennessee's lineup is. They are just coming off their series at LSU, and so their eyes are going to be very hot and not kind of overwhelmed with the stuff that Florida is going to throw at them. But then on the flip side, yes, Tennessee will probably be able to hang offensively, but they've also got to deal with the Gators offense. So I think that I don't think runs will be at a premium. I think that it'll be a relatively high scoring series. And I lean giving the edge to the Vols. It's going to be, I think it will almost certainly come down to Sunday. If it doesn't come, or Saturday rather, with Easter being on Sunday. I think it'll almost certainly come down to the game, to a decisive game three. So it'll be a really good series. And if Florida is able to win this one, it'll be a super loud road series win. And then if Tennessee loses this one, as we alluded to, it'll just kind of be a kick it down the road conversation, so to speak, as to when they will get going.
Yeah, we'll have to see about that. Two really exciting ones this weekend in the SEC. Let's go out west. Oregon is coming off of, or Oregon State, excuse me, is coming off of a much needed series win against Washington. Oregon, meanwhile, comes in red hot. They've won 9 straight. That's the third longest active winning streak in the country as we record this. We'll see what happens in the midweeks, of course, but they are coming off of a sweep of Arizona right now. Oof. Oh boy. That's a different conversation. Oregon, though, looking very good to this point. They, however, like this 9-game streak, they won the last two at Washington State. And Washington State this year, we've talked about it, no pushover, solid road series win. And then it's 4 wins against Northwestern State, in one of those weird kind of midseason, like, who really knows what to make of this non-conference series. And then again, Arizona. They've lost 9 straight Pac-12 games. They're fighting it. But that was a road series win for Oregon. So big deal for the Ducks to get that road sweep. Oregon State has some tough series losses at this point, and getting that win last weekend at Washington might be exactly what they need to kick on. And they're going into a rivalry series, which is always heated, and everyone's going to be up for this one. I think this has the potential to be a really fun one. And also is still going to be educational for us as we try and figure out exactly what Oregon and Oregon State are this year. Oregon right now is an insane RPI. They're at 12 as we record this, and they need to validate that number in Pac-12 play. But this is a team that's been in the mix to host regionals the last couple of years, a series win this weekend, and they're probably going to hang right in there all season long again. On the flip side, Oregon State is, buzzing around the bubble. And if they don't win this weekend, that's just going to, be even more of their reality. So both of them, again, it's only the first weekend of April, but there are some real postseason implications on top of the rivalry stuff that is going to be there in Eugene this weekend.
Yeah, and it's a big series for each team, as you touched on, for different reasons. Oregon, if they were to win this, they'd probably solidify themselves as a tournament team, be brought up in the hosting discussion, and then depending on how everything else shakes out, maybe make their way into the top 25. And then with Oregon State, that series win over Washington, even though the Huskies are my personal cheeseball team. For those unfamiliar with the term, cheeseball just means personal favorite. So I've been a huge Huskies advocate. They did take them down this weekend, which was enormous for them. It was a series win that they really, really needed, and they got it over a quality ball club. And so if they're able to take that momentum into this weekend and beat Oregon, I think that they will have, I don't want to say righted the ship completely, because it's a bit of a drastic statement to make over 5 or 6 games, but they will have probably worked themselves back into to a regional conversation, and look to take on what is now top 25 USC the following weekend. So Travis Bezzana continues to be the guy for the Beavers. He's hitting .366 with 11 doubles and 3 home runs and a team leading 25 RBIs. He is just thunderous bat speed, plays the game extremely hard, He's a leader on the field and off the field. He has incredible knowledge metrically of his own swing and just baseball in general. He's just a baseball nut. So he's a very fun player. Micah McDowell has been great as a table setter, hitting over 340. And then on the mound, pitching, they've gotten strong pitching all year. ERA is just 3.4, but Trent Sellers has been their best arm by far, with 59 Ks and 33 innings. And then out of the bullpen, Ryan Brown has been dynamite. And then for the Ducks, I think that they have more of a gaudy kind of lineup with Tanner Smith, Sabin Ceballos, Colby Shade, and Riku Nishita. Riku Nishida's come on as of late. Production wasn't really there, but he had a great series this past weekend. Is now hitting above 320. And then Jacob Walsh
hitting 410 in conference play as Riku Nishita.
Unbelievable. And on the season, he's got 13 walks to 8 Ks. He's an on-base specialist. He's only made one error on the dirt, or I guess on the turf of PK Park. And then Jacob Walsh has really, really been outstanding lately, especially this past weekend. He won Pac-12 Player of the Week. Now up to 293, has thunderous power from the left side. And so this is a Ducks team that's really solid on paper. And I don't know for either team to win this series, I will have renewed excitement about each ball club. But if Oregon wins this series, I'll suddenly become a whole lot more excited about the Ducks, and my wheels will start really turning about what they could be as a club. So I'm really looking forward to this weekend. Again, as you mentioned, Oregon State is one of the best rivalries in the country, and that'll surely be a very competitive, highly contested series. So a fun one on tap up at PK Park.
I really like what Oregon's been able to do on the mound. Like, they haven't been banged up a little bit. Their rotation isn't the best, but they're still finding a way on the mound. They're really built from the back. Josh Molaris has been one of the impact transfers, one of the better ones around the country. I was definitely one that went under the radar when it happened. He's a grad transfer from San Francisco. I'm sure we ranked him in our top 100, but I'm also sure it wasn't very high. But he's been dynamite as their closer. And again, like, their rotation is not where their bread is buttered on the mound, but they're hitting really well. They have a solid bullpen. I think that's a pretty good recipe for them moving forward. And I will be a little bit interested, because I think that Oregon State certainly has the advantage in the rotation and maybe on the mound period this weekend, but not by a ton, I don't think. And you know, Oregon has a really exciting lineup. So a tricky one for both teams this weekend, a needed one for both teams for different reasons. But I think that makes this weekend really special, potentially, in Eugene. Okay, last one that we wanted to touch on, going back across the other side of the country, Miami is going to Virginia. Now, Miami is coming off of that sweep of Florida State, again, the first time they've swept the Noles since 2001, so they've got some momentum coming into this. Virginia, on the other hand, did not win their rivalry series. They went to Virginia Tech and lost on Saturday and Sunday, their first series loss of the season, so they're looking to get right as they return home. For Miami, this is a big weekend. If they're going to, they are a good team. What we know about Miami is they're a good team. They have the wins that they have, but they have not really competed well against the elite teams. And now, I guess, considering that Virginia just lost this series, maybe you can question, especially if they were to lose this weekend, is Virginia an elite team? But Miami went 1-5 on the road. You know, it was on the road, but they went 1-5 against Florida and Wake Forest and wasn't super competitive in a lot of those games. If they do that again this weekend at Virginia, I think we kind of have our answer about what Miami's ceiling is. But on the other hand, if they're able to this weekend come out and get some big wins, they'll have a real shot in the division race. They'll have kind of proven what they are to an extent. So I think this is a massive weekend for Miami, and it's coming at a good time. They pitched really well this weekend. Their rotation, all three guys pitched into the eighth inning, which is special. And they do have some momentum coming out of that Florida State series.
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head. I think if Virginia were to lose this series, well, barring some really unforeseen result with how they lose it, I won't be overly concerned. Maybe I won't have them in that
elite tier of teams anymore, but I really won't be all that concerned about Virginia given their personnel. Excuse me. And they're a team that's 17-0 at home. Kyle Teal and Ethan O'Donnell have been outstanding for them. But with Miami, the key for them and why they've been able to get going is like you mentioned, their pitching staff and their weekend rotation, particularly Gage Zeal, who after the first couple of weekends was a guy that I know we were a little concerned about. I'm sure Miami was a little bit concerned about him as well, but he's really come on as of late. He's got outstanding stuff. He's got a plus slider, fastball up to 97. Carson Ligon is more of the pitchability specialist of the two. He'll just attack the zone, throw quality strikes. Nothing he really throws is straight. And then Alejandro Rosario also turned in a great outing. And he has great stuff, really loud stuff, but the numbers aren't necessarily to boot. But when it's all going for him, it's really good. And then you throw in Andrew Walters, who, for my money's worth, is the best closer in the country. So they've got a legit back-end guy with Walters, and then their offense is they've hit the ball really well. And CJ Cafe is coming on, similar to how Gage Zeal, the geez, the spring allergies are just kicking my butt. good God, I feel like I'm like in the box against Paul Skeens, but no, Cafe and Zeal coming on at the same time has been fantastic for Miami, and they've reaped the benefits of both of their production. So they're going to have to go in and beat UVA at a place where they haven't lost yet this season. But if they were to go in there and win the series, they'd be well positioned in the conference race. And then also I'd start to talk about them as a host and then what they could do once they make a regional. And is that an Omaha team? Are we talking about them as, I don't want to say national championship team quite yet, but are we talking about them as a potential Omaha team? I'm very curious to see how they look on both sides of the baseball. How their lineup navigates facing Conley or how their lineup faces Brian Edgington. The Virginia pitching staff that has been really, really good up to this point, and then also how their arms will go through a Virginia lineup that is chock full of professional prospects. So a really good series for a lot of reasons. One that will probably, in my mind, determine who I think is probably the class of that conference. And it'll set up an interesting race going forward.
The concern I have in this specific matchup for Miami, like I don't worry about it terribly much in the long run, but in this specific matchup for Miami, I worry about the depth of their pitching staff. They just do not throw that many guys out there. And this is the kind of weekend where you might run through a whole bunch of pitchers because Virginia can do that to you. So if that happens, how does Miami respond to it if they don't get length from their starters? It was great that it happened last weekend that way, but can they still find that success if they have to get into their bullpen faster? You're right. They have arguably the best closer in the country, but you got to give him the lead, and they have guys that they can go to, but can they go to them multiple times on the weekend? Like that's just something that I'm curious about this weekend. Virginia, it's not like they're elite on the mound either. Like they're good. They're down Nick Parker for the moment. I believe they're still down Nick Parker following that scary scene where he got hit with a comebacker or line drive comebacker. Makes it sound like it was a dribbler a couple weeks ago. So they didn't have him last weekend against Virginia Tech. I assume he'll be out again this weekend. And you know what does that do for their pitching staff as everyone has to fill in those innings. But another very offensive weekend, I expect. Slowing the UVA lineup down is really hard to do. Virginia Tech was able to do it enough to grab a couple wins. Now Miami will have to do it, but they're going to have to do it in Charlottesville. And like you said, Peter, UVA really, really, really difficult at home. Not just this year, but historically, they're very difficult to beat in Charlottesville. And that's what the task is for Miami. But you asked the question about like, if they win this, like then you get into the hosting race and everything. And, as someone that just spent the morning, like working through the hosting race as it stands, Miami is kind of in it right now. It'd look differently if they lost the series to be sure, but the hosting race is a mess, and you got to have 16 hosts is the thing. And the outside of the SEC, finding those 16 becomes a little more challenging. The last couple spots in this hosting race right now are very much up for grabs. Some teams that we think are good don't have the metrics right now, and I'm not really worried about it. If they're as good as they are, they'll get those metrics, but they don't have them now. And some teams that have the metrics right now have very sketchy conference records, like UCLA sitting top 10 in the RPI and 6-5 in the Pac-12 after that series loss over the weekend. So there's just a lot of messiness right now. And maybe a team like Miami could take advantage of that and jump into it with both feet with a series win this weekend.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, and there is a huge just jumble and mess, particularly in the last few hosting slots. But with conference play heating up and all these marquee series, it is one that will be cleaned up reasonably quick, I think, and we'll have.
Yeah, these SEC teams can't all be 8-1 forever.
Exactly. So it'll be a mess that gets cleaned up rather swiftly.
Yeah, it's a tough time. And we experience it on Sunday night when we do our rankings. I experience it when I try and sort out the hosts. We have a clean top 10 right now, I'd say. And if you look around at the various other polls, I think you'll see that everyone generally is in agreement about the top 10 teams. And then it really deteriorates from there. And that's just where we are in the season. We'll the mess will come to the top 10 and be cleaned up in 15 through 20 at some point. But, you know, we'll... every season goes through, you know, these stages, and right now we're trying to figure out who that top tier of teams is, and it's an exciting time as everything works through itself naturally, like you said. We'll get there, and we'll be discussing it here on the Baseball America College podcast over the next several weeks. So make sure you're subscribed to the Baseball America podcast on your favorite podcasting app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Wherever you get your podcasts, hit that follow or subscribe button and rate and review if you can. We really appreciate that. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter is at Peter G. Flaherty. All of our work is over at baseballamerica.com, and there's plenty of it this time of year, as it's a really fun time for Baseball America, not just in college, but if you're tracking the draft or tracking minor league baseball or major league baseball, we've got plenty of stuff there to read, so check that out. We'll be back here with another edition of the Baseball America College podcast next week. Until then, thanks for listening. For Peter, I'm Teddy. We'll talk to you next time.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.